यमुना तेरा वनचारे यमुना तेरा वनचारे जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारे यमुना तीरावन चारे जय राधा माधव कुंज विहारी
जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तरशत श्री श्रीमद् हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस ऐसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्री प्रभुपाद की जय अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय ग्रंथराज श्रीमद्भागवतम की जय ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग सो वी आर रीडिंग फ्रॉम कैंटो 9 चैप्टर 9 टेक्स्ट 48 इति व्यवसितो बुद्ध्या नारायण गृहीतया हित्वान्यभावम् अज्ञानम् ततस्वं भावमास्थितः इति व्यवसितो बुद्ध्या नारायण गृहीतया हित्वान्यभावमज्ञानम् ततस्वं भावमास्थितः इति व्यवसितो बुद्ध्या नारायणगृहीतया हित्वान्यभावमज्ञानम् ततस्वं भावमास्थितः Please recite. इति दस व्यवसितः हैविंग फर्मली डिसाइडेड बुद्ध्या बाय प्रॉपर इंटेलिजेंस नारायण गृहीतया completely controlled by the mercy of Narayana, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, hitva, giving up, anyabhavam, consciousness other than Krishna consciousness, ajnanam, which is nothing but constant ignorance and darkness, Tataha, thereafter, Swam, his original position as eternal servant of Krishna, Bhavam, devotional service, Astitaha, situated. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thus, Maharaj Khatwanga, by his advanced intelligence in rendering devotional service to the Lord, gave up false identification with the body full of ignorance. In his original position of eternal servitorship, he engaged himself in rendering service to the Lord. Purport. When one actually becomes purely Krishna conscious, no one has any right to rule over him. When situated in Krishna consciousness, one is no longer in the darkness of ignorance. And when freed from all such darkness, one is situated in his original position. Jivera Swarupa Haya Krishnera Nitya Dasa. The living entity is eternally the servant of the Lord. And thus when he engages himself in the service of the Lord in all respects, he enjoys the perfection of life. Om Ajnanatimirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Sva Padantikam Vancha Kalpaturubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare So welcome Shravan I hope you have nostalgic memories of being in the ashram Okay, so those who come to be punished in my Bhagavatam class, they know that I ask questions. So you ready? Okay. So the very first sentence of the purport, Prabhupada writes, when one actually becomes purely Krishna conscious, no one has any right to rule over him. What does that mean? It's there in the purport. Yeah, Giridhari. Do you have a mic for Sriman Giridhari Das? Yeah, yeah, you'll get your chance to.
I've heard, I've forgotten where, but trying to think of the reference. Someone where someone's wife was offended and he said, unless it was a Vaishnava or a Brahmana, I will destroy him or something like that because I can't do anything if it was a Vaishnava. So in a sense like in the material realm, like the king, the Vaishnava is above the ruling of the king.
Hmm.
Like that.
What makes a Vaishnava above the ruling of a king? Irina, did you have your hand up? Okay, give her the mic, please. What is my question? Hold the mic. Hold the mic, I'll tell you the question. All right. The first sentence in the purport says, when one actually becomes purely Krishna conscious, no one has the right to rule over him. What does it mean?
I think this means when you're very stable in Krishna conscious, and any information goes around that will never affect the one who become Krishna conscious. Meaning that you cannot change your fate in believing Krishna conscious. There is no way you can fall down or something like that in simple words.
Okay, interesting. Well, thank you for sharing. Okay, Shravan and then Acharyanishtha.
Still trying to understand your question, Prabhu. When you mentioned the rule, the definition of rule is in terms of pertaining to material world or something?
I don't know. It's there in the purport. I'm asking, what does it mean? Because I didn't understand. I'm asking the audience, what does it mean?
Looks like it has two different answers based on that one definition.
Okay, give both.
One is completely absorbed in Krishna consciousness. Cannot be ruled through the material rules, is already aloof from the three modes of nature, which is not affecting to at all. Another definition, rule is still independent even spiritually if someone is trying to rule, because he still has his own choice to choose. He's a servant of Krishna. That's what
okay.
Contemplation.
Okay, you're in the neighborhood.
Same thing as Prabhu was saying about in the sense that since he's purely Krishna conscious, no one has the, it's my speculation, but no one has the right to like correct him or like question his behavior or something like that, because he's...
So they're not accountable to anyone?
Not that sense, but... because every action of theirs is Krishna conscious.
So, they're not accountable to anyone?
No, they are accountable, but because like it's sometimes difficult to understand from our stage, we are trying to understand their position of Krishna consciousness and trying to understand their position. But
okay.
they are accountable to maybe their authority. This is my understanding.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Okay. Acharyanishtha.
It says no one has any right to rule over him. So he becomes, because he's totally connected with Krishna, who's independent, Swarat, he's also independent in that sense. He's accountable but to Krishna directly.
So let's go. You have anything?
No one has any right to rule over him because he's connected with the Supreme Independent, so he also, by contact, becomes independent in that sense. He's accountable only to Krishna.
So, let's see who is ruled versus one who rules, okay? Is there anywhere in our Prabhupada's books a reference to the devotee who can rule on everyone else? Yes? Yes? Yes?
Dhruva Maharaj.
No, the direct verse that says one can rule over everyone else. Bhakti Shastri, a verse that says that one can rule over everyone else. Nectar of instruction, verse number 1. Sarvam apimam prithvim sa shishyat. One can be the Sishyat, it says one can be the spiritual master of the whole world. That means the one can pretty much rule over the whole world. The whole world can become disciplined by. Api mam sishyat. Sishya means to be a disciple. Comes from the word sashana. So sashana in Sanskrit means to discipline. If a person doesn't have jurisdiction or authority on another person, they cannot discipline them. So who's a person who can discipline the whole world? One who has tolerated the urges of speech, the urge of the mind, urges of anger, the urges of tongue, belly and genitals. So that's one way of looking at it. Another way of looking at this sentence or statement is that one who is fully Krishna conscious becomes independent, and that's what the verse is talking about. Becomes independent of the domination of the material energy. So material energy means that one is not governed by the laws that otherwise govern this material world. So one is not obligated by or accountable to anything or anyone in this world. So by anything, let's say, what are the laws that govern anyone in this material world? You got it? Birth, death, disease, old age and new age. These are things that govern people. That was a joke, by the way. Okay. So no one has freedom from these. Regardless of how intelligent they are, how advanced technologically they are, who they are in this world, everyone has to bow down to birth, death, disease and old age. Except the person who is fully Krishna conscious. So in their case, death may come also because the body has to die, but they are not governed by the fear of these things. Okay. So that's freedom. It's called mukti or vimukti. Another way of looking at it is because they have become free of the material energy, they become as independent as the absolute personality of Godhead, who's called Swarat. Swarat means supremely independent. They have the similar freedom, if you will, or independence. However, they take their sense of free will and subordinate it to the rules of the internal potency. So they will follow, or they will independently give their subordination to Krishna. Because no one can be as independent as Krishna. Although one who is attached to Krishna can enjoy similar independence. However, they take that independence or that free will and make it subservient to the Lord. They repose it. The phrase that we've used to hearing is they repose it at the lotus feet of Krishna. And therefore Krishna can say, do this and do that. And they happily do it. Another way of looking at it also is that the living entity is always or never independent. The living entity is always under Maya, whether in the conditioned stage or in the liberated stage. In the conditioned state, is under he or she, or the living entity, is under the influence of the external potency of Krishna. So he is subservient to the external potency. And in the liberated state, he is subservient to the internal potency. Because by nature, the living entity is Shakti or predominated. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, aparasteyam idam anyam. There is another energy of mine, anyam, another energy of mine, that is free from or is different from the previous one, the material energy. The material energy, he gives the whole list: earth, water, fire, air, ether, false ego, mind, intelligence, etc. These eight constitute my separated energy. In the next verse he says, there is another energy of mine, apara, aparamayam itastu anyam, prakritim vidhi. You should know, Arjuna, that I have another energy of mine. That energy is called the living entity. Now, under one energy, the sense of lack of freedom is very, very obvious. The sense of lack of freedom is, one is forced by birth, death, disease and old age. So it is in one sense an involuntary force. We cannot choose. I don't want to get old. I cannot choose like that. I cannot choose. I want to be free of disease. So here it is forced. On the other side, one is considered fully independent or free. That's why it's called mukti. Mukti means free. Now it's usually Prabhupada gives the reference of a prison and life outside prison. In prison, one is forced, incarcerated. Sometimes they're allowed to play basketball. But one shouldn't think, because I'm playing basketball, I'm free. How much ever basketball they get to play, there is a fence, barbed wire, sometimes electrified. And there are some very stringent laws. You cannot keep hairstyle like you like it. You can't have kantimala, of course. Point is, you cannot, you're always not sure what fight you'll get into, what will happen. You cannot do this, you cannot do that. You only have to wear this color, that color only, etc. It's very, very stringent. And just because someone play basketball or smoke a cigarette or walk around a little bit, one shouldn't think, this is freedom. Real freedom lies outside those walls. Now, outside those walls, although anyone who's not in prison is free, those persons who are free knowingly subjugate themselves to the laws of the state. You follow traffic law. We're all free. Like, none of us is incarcerated, we're not in prison. But we follow this law of the state. We follow traffic laws, we pay our taxes, whatever we're supposed to do, we do. We're doing it voluntarily. So now take the same as the material world and the spiritual world. In the material world, we are forced by laws. In the spiritual world, we are independent, though we voluntarily follow the laws of the spiritual world. The laws of the spiritual world in this verse are called Svam Bhavam. So Prabhupada uses the phrase devotional service, Bhavam. In the very last line, he says, Tataha Svam Bhavam Asthitaha. Asthita means situated. Bhavam asthitaha. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, many places, mad bhavam agataha. Agata means one reaches. madbhavam. He reaches my nature. So bhavam is usually is consciousness or one's nature. Here Prabhupada says devotional service, because one's true nature is devotional service. Muktir hitvanyatha swarupena vyavasthitihi. The definition of mukti, freedom, means to restore oneself back to their original state of health. When one, just this morning I was hearing Prabhupada say, when one is in a feverish condition, a person in a feverish condition is also eating. They're eating hospital food, the tastiest, the most well-developed food, correct? Right? No. The hospital food and airline food is considered to be the trashiest, horrible food. So just because a patient is eating in the hospital, one should not think that the one person who's outside the hospital in a good state of health, who's also eating, to think that it's the same. It's not the same. Right? So one may be free, so-called free here. One's free out there. It's not the same. However, when a person's health is restored, they become free to eat what they like. So mukti means to become free from the feverish condition and become situated in our real nature. And that real nature is to be a servant of Krishna. And the artificial state is to be a servant of Maya. Servant, always. Whose servant is the question. Okay? So if one is always a servant, which is what the verse is saying, and Prabhupada saying in the purport, the very first statement seems to be a contradiction. That one who is purely Krishna conscious, no one has any right to rule over him. So that right to rule over him means that no material laws apply anymore. And therefore you will find throughout history that although the kings, any king is considered to be nrdevata. That's the phrase. Nrdevata means God, the representative of God in human form. A king is considered to be God's representative because he has the ability and jurisdiction over the people in the land, and almost as if he's supremely independent. Because we heard the phrase, the king is above the law. Even great kings, you'll find, never interfere in the ways of life of a Vaishnava. Give you examples. King of Orissa, he, Prataparudra Maharaj, although he is the supreme personality within the land, he could never extend his jurisdiction to Lord Chaitanya and Lord Chaitanya's associates. Except there's one pastime where one of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's associates was sentenced to die on a changa. That's a different pastime. But in general, he had said that the devotees of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu should not be interfered with. Or any great king. They will not. In Ramanujacharya's pastimes, all the kings step back and let Ramanujacharya do what he likes. Except one Chola king who was a Shaivite. He was a follower of Lord Shiva, and he was threatened that Ramanujacharya was making everyone Vaishnavas. So he wanted to invite Ramanujacharya for a conversation with the hidden intent of killing Ramanujacharya. It's a whole different story. Something's happened. The guy, he tried to do something to Ramanujacharya, but actually it was not Ramanujacharya. Ramanujacharya's two disciples went disguised as Ramanujacharya and Mahapurna. And he had never met Ramanujacharya, so he thought these are the persons, and he asked them to be blinded with hot iron skewers. And he burnt their eyes. So Kuresha lost his eyesight, and one of the other disciples who went along, Mahapurna went, he succumbed to the wounds and died on the way. But the king could not do anything in general. So pretty much in any Vaishnava's life, a pure Vaishnava's life, the king cannot overrule them. It doesn't mean that the Vaishnava goes ahead and says to the king, you know, go to hell, I don't care. It's not like that. They understand that the Vaishnavas are beyond material laws. So when one says no one has right to rule, now that includes not just the king, but also the demigods. Okay. One of the ways a person feels obliged to someone is when they feel a sense of debt. If I owe you money, then I'm ruled by you. Right? You increase the interest rates. Anyone of us has credit cards? If they increase interest rates, they increase the interest rate on the mortgage, you can't say anything. How much can you protest? You just have to pay. And if you don't pay, they take away the home, they take away your property. Right? So there are personalities in this world to whom we are indebted. And who are they? The Bhagavatam gives a list. Ancestors, sages, the demigods. What's the verse? First canto. In the Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, verse 41, Prabhupada refers to this verse. Devarshi Bhuta Apta. Devarshi Bhutapta Pitrin Nirnam, etc. So devas, the demigods, rishis, the sages, bhuta, the other living entities, apta, relatives. Devarshi Bhutapta Nirnam, other human beings, etc. We are obliged to them. We are indebted to them. How? How are we indebted to the demigods? Come on, guys. Help me out. They're providing sunlight, air, water, etc. Did you know that every muscle in our body is controlled by a particular demigod? And if they say, your karma has been lost for this particular part of the body, that particular part stops moving, or that particular muscle loses its movement. That's why you find certain persons debilitated physically or mentally or whatever. There's certain demigod's power has been withdrawn. Okay, so Deva, Rishi, how are we obliged to the sages? They give us knowledge. They have left behind their experiences, their teachings. Deva, Rishi, Bhuta, other living entities. Anyone read what's on a yogurt box, what the contents are? Acidophilus bacteria, for example. Are we dependent on bacteria for digestion? Yeah. Probiotics. Nowadays they come in capsules. Or without the cows, without the horses, without the earthworms, without all the other living entities in the ecology, we cannot survive. If you kill one entity or remove it, the whole ecological equilibrium comes out of balance. That's why people say that in every part of our body has some value. Therefore, they don't believe in taking it out. Oh, that's not working? Take it out. That's not working? Take it out. Brain's not working? Take it out. It's not like that. There's a whole ecosystem. It works in a very, very mutually enriching way. One of the issues now is the lack of bees or the reduction in the bee population. When we don't have bees, you know what's a bee? Bzzz. Okay. I don't know, you have to say it in English in a way. Okay, so bees. When we don't have bees, we don't have certain species of plants to become pollinated. And when bees pollinate, or you get honey from the local bees, you become immune to diseases. That's not there. I was in Govardhan Eco Village, and one of the questions was, why don't you have Wi-Fi? So Gauranga Prabhu told me, if we have Wi-Fi towers and all that, by those waves, because they're all radio waves, the local population of sparrows die. You don't see as many sparrows as soon as you have many towers shown up, because those birds die. They're very important for the ecosystem. Crows, of course, in America you don't see so many crows, but they're all important aspect of ecosystem. So bhuta, apta, are we obliged to our relatives? Hopefully not. But they give us what we call social interactions. They pritran, they leave us the lineage that we're part of. Every lineage has a particular identity, certain traditions, etc. And one learns from them. So the Bhagavatam says that a human being is completely indebted, therefore under the rule of all these entities. Only yah sarvatmana sharanam sharanyam, one who has wholeheartedly taken shelter of Krishna, gato mukundam parihartya kurtam, such a person is free. Free of debt. And the word free means that these entities cannot rule over them. So Maharaj Khatvanga, he was given the opportunity. You have helped us. The demigods have spoken to him. You have helped us thoroughly in our fight against the demons. What do you want? And he considered. He said, how much time do I have left? They said, only a few moments. So if I have only a few moments left, then let me ask for Krishna consciousness. So here, because he asked for Krishna consciousness, the verse starts, actually it's a conclusion. Wherever you hear a verse start with the word iti, it means thus. So it's a conclusion, it's a concluding phrase. Iti vyavasito buddhya. Vyavasito buddha means one who is firmly decided. Vyavasita. You hear the word vyavasa anywhere? Vyavasayatmika buddhi. What does it mean? Buddhi that is determined. So iti vyavasito buddhya. That he used the faculty of intelligence in making a firm decision. Now many people make firm decisions, but the decision and the criteria both are horrible or substandard, if you will. One can be doggedly determined for the wrong thing, and such persons are called asinine. because you're stubborn as an ass. Because I've decided and I will stay with it. But it's the wrong thing. So real intelligence has two factors. Not only is the ability to choose, but also the ability to choose the right thing. This is real intelligence. So he said, iti vyavasita buddha. With that vyavasita buddhi, firm determination, he used his intelligence for what? Narayana grihitaya. Grihitaya, grihita actually means to hold on to. Narayana grihitaya means he held completely to being controlled by the mercy of Narayana. That's what Prabhupada translates as, completely controlled by the mercy of Narayana. He said, if I only have few moments left, let me firmly hold the lotus feet of Krishna. This is it. This is the right choice. And hitva anya bhavam ajnanam. Hitva, he gave up. So Prabhupada this morning was saying, if you want to go to the other side of darkness into the spiritual realm, then you have to give up this realm. And people don't want to give up this realm because they think they're going to lose something. And he was saying they will think, I'm happy here. If I have to give up this happiness, then I have nothing to look forward to. And Prabhupada says, no, there is happiness on that side as well. Real happiness. But to taste that real happiness, you have to give up this sense of happiness. And the analogy he gave is, if you're holding something in your hands, but you're asked to hold something else, unless you drop this from your hand, you cannot hold on to something else. You cannot say, I'll hold both. It's not possible. Right? If you're holding a plate with food and someone brings a box of Bhagavad Gita and says, can you hold this? It's not easy to hold both. You have to leave the plate aside and hold this. You have to hold the mridanga, you have to hold something else. You have to leave one and hold something else. So Maharaj Khatwanga, he left anyabhavam. Anyabhavam means the other consciousness. The other consciousness is, I am this body. He left that and he accepted Narayana Grihita. He held on to the consciousness that I am a servant of Krishna. And this is why he is considered very great, because he at the right moment made that perfect choice. And not only did he make the choice, in a determined way. Tatha Swam Bhavamasta. And therefore, he was situated in his original constitutional nature. This is Maharaj Khatwanga's. So, then the lesson for us is, at every moment, depending upon what decision we make, we place ourselves, or we are placed, in a certain type of consciousness or state of mind, as you want to call it. So how important it is to make proper choices. At every point we have that choice. And as soon as we make the choice, the consequence of the choice is, it places us under certain consciousness, or within certain consciousness. So the choice is, do I place myself within Krishna consciousness as a servant of Krishna, or as the other, whatever that other is? Sometimes we feel, I didn't have a choice. We always have the choice, we just didn't take it. Because things happen so fast. In the moment, as we say. At that moment. So our ability to choose becomes weak by the urges that are flowing in the material realm. There's a wave, or waves, if you will. We call them urges, or in Sanskrit they're called vegas. Right? That's why Rupa Goswami starts with iti vegas, etan vegan. All these six urges, they're constantly forcing us to choose against our own benefit. Somehow we make choices that are detrimental to us, and later when we think, we say, I should not have done this. I could have, should have. So Arjuna says to Krishna, it's the same problem, right? In the third chapter. What is it, Krishna, that I feel I'm being impelled by a force to make choices against my own wish? I don't want to, but I'm forced, as if there is a force that is pushing me. And Krishna says that force is called lust. Lust means desire to enjoy separate from Krishna. Or another way of saying it is, lust means the urge or the force that makes us think that there is happiness within material choices. I forget how that verse starts that Arjuna says, Krishna, what is this force? I forget the first word. Atakena prayuktoyam. Thank you. Papam charati purushaha. And he says, niyojita iva balaha. As if I'm being pushed by a force outside of me. And Krishna says, it's not a force outside of you, it's a force within you. So we can't say, may the force be with you. We'd rather say, may the force not be with you. Etan vegan. These forces, they push us to making the wrong choice. May the force of Krishna consciousness be with you. These are the words from the Jedi. Anyway, but you get the idea. It's being free of those forces. So one can choose freely. Etan vegan yo vishaheta dhira. So Rupa Goswami says, learn to tolerate. Although we're being pushed to say and do something, one learning to tolerate it. Learning to tolerate it at that moment gives us clear headspace to know what to do. And if we use the clear headspace to know what to do, to choose how to act as a servant of Krishna, then we are situated in our true nature. Otherwise, we are situated in anya bhavam, another nature. That another nature has been taking us from one life form to another perpetually. So Krishna consciousness is all about, in that moment, choosing how to be a servant of Krishna. This is the real intelligence, vyavasita buddhi. And that's our practice every day. So from morning till evening, we constantly are reinforcing ourselves with the idea, I'm a servant of Krishna, servant of Krishna, I'm a servant of Krishna, I'm a servant of Krishna. So that when the right moment comes, when we are slapped with having to make a choice, we don't say, I'm the master. And this is why Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives the example of chanting like a parrot. He says you can make a parrot also chant Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. He can say it again and again and again. And he can say it very sweetly also. But as soon as a cat walks into the room, the parrot, instead of saying Hare Krishna, says, because it's that moment of truth. So parrot-like chanting means chanting without the internal development of realization that I'm actually a servant of Krishna. So when we notice our lives, if we look back, then we'll see that all the choices that we made, although we knew better, was when we did not choose to be a servant of Krishna. And any moments where we genuinely asked ourselves, am I a servant of Krishna in this? We've had some very deep realizations. That's the difference. And Katvanga Maharaj's example is given that at that moment when he was told, you're about to die in a few moments. Why is Parikshit Maharaj in this chapter, there's a whole lineage of kings being spoken about. And when he talks about, and Shukadev Goswami talks about Khatvanga Maharaj, who became Krishna conscious in a moment, Parikshit Maharaj says, I want to know about him. Because I have 7 days, and he had a few moments. How great is he? That in a few moments he became Krishna conscious. I have 7 days. When we read Bhagavatam, we think, Parikshit Maharaj, 7 days. We have a whole lifetime. How great is he? So this is the nature of devotees, that they're always looking at someone. The nature of humility is you always look at the greatness of others. Like, wow, in a few moments he became purely Krishna conscious. I want to hear about him. How did he do it? This is how he did it. Vyavasita Buddhya. Narayana Grihitaya. So if we leave this discussion today, during the day, if there is one phrase that can move in our consciousness whole day, is Narayana Grihitaya. To be controlled by the mercy of Lord Narayana. So whatever choices we make today, if we ask ourselves, Narayana Grihitaya, how can I be controlled by the mercy of Lord Narayana? Any comments, Acharnishta?
The question, because Maharaj Katvanga is glorified as one who at the very last moment became Krishna conscious, but yeah, the few verses prior,
he says, since my childhood,
sounds like he was quite Krishna conscious almost correct, his whole life. So could you...
So even Parikshit Maharaj is considered that he was a Mahabhagavat from the beginning. Like in the stock market, it is said that past performance is not an indication of future performance. Right? When you're about to buy a stock, they tell you, past performance is not an indication of future performance. So although in the past, one may have great accolades, it is at the point of test, at the point of death. That's why Krishna says in the 8th chapter, Smaran Muktva Kalevaram, at the time of giving up the body, because that's the biggest test. One may have great accolades here, but at that time, the moment, one, what's one's consciousness? Of course, we understand that our consciousness is developed gradually over time. But in anyone's case, at any moment, it's not the past credits that help, but it's the choice we make at that moment. So Ajamil had great credits or credentials previously, but at a particular point he didn't make the right choice. Or Bharat Maharaj, who was at the stage of Bhava, although great credentials in the past, at that particular moment made some other choice. So the point that's stressed is, at any moment, what choice we make, not so much as what credentials we bring with us. Because some persons, although with great credentials, are known to have making not so intelligent choices. He did not rest on his laurels. I'm already a great devotee. How I die is really, since my childhood I've been like, this is nothing. Bring it on. No, that's the point, that we don't rest on past laurels. It's at this point, what choice I make, that's what I get. In other words, our Krishna consciousness is not like an auto mode. Submission is at every moment. So at that moment of great change or choice, he was very actively present and making that choice. Does that help? Anyone else? You're Ananta Vilas, right?
Yes. Prabhu, thank you for a wonderful class. I had this question, like, as Katranga Maharaj and Parikshit Maharaj were given this choice, does everybody still, like, at the time, like, death can come any moment, do they also have that, like, do they also come to know that at the last moment they're going to die and have that still? That?
Not everyone. But if death can come at every moment, choice is also available at every moment. Right? And has any one of us been told that death is going to come? Has anyone been held, anyone has been secretly held away from the truth that death is coming? No. We've all been told, an ample number of times. So everyone's got the notice. Everyone got the memo. Yeah. The only thing that's not been told is when. But that's part of the adventure of life. Mm. That's part of the adventure of life. Because if we were told when, we'd become devastated. Even if it meant 50 years later. 50? I'm still very young. I don't have much time. That's part of the adventure. It keeps the thrill. Yeah. You ever been to a roller coaster ride?
Yeah, yes, Prabhu.
Okay. So here's the difference. When you're not on the roller coaster, do you see the ups and downs? And the turns and twists? Yes, you see. But when you're on the roller coaster, do you see when the ups and downs are coming? No, you can't tell. That's the difference. So those who are detached from material existence, they can see. Those who are in it, can't see. But that's part of the thrill. People like the thrill. You're turned upside down, come out of it, all organs, you know, rearranged. Do it again. We'll do it again. This is called Puna Puna Charvita Charvani. Do it again and again. Oh, that was a thrill. Okay, anyone else? Irina? Okay, Giri there.
Prabhu, thank you for the class. And I have a question about Prabhupada. The last sentence in the Prabhupada says, the living entity is eternally the servant of the Lord, and thus when he engages himself in the service of the Lord in all respects, he enjoys the perfection of life. For some reason, a pure servant, I don't think he would like to enjoy. And
really?
Yeah, because we know the Supreme Personality of Godhead is enjoyer. So why is it says in the purport he enjoys the perfection of life?
When you look at Prabhupada, do you think, and you see La Prabhupada's life, do you think he was having a good time or a bad time? Was Prabhupada having a good time?
I don't know.
You've never seen any videos of Prabhupada dancing, smiling, eating and distributing prasadam and worshipping the Lord? Was he having a good time or was like, I can't enjoy this, I can't enjoy this? Okay, when you have great kirtan and you're dancing, are you having a good time or only Krishna is having a good time?
I always have a good time, but I'm not a pure servant.
It doesn't matter. But because you're part of devotional service, true happiness is in bhakti. That enjoyment, you cannot say that enjoyment is not part of a living entity's life. Enjoyment is our birthright. It is our birthright. To feel happy is our birthright. Anandamaya abhyasat. And it is the search for happiness that is taking every one of us to do what we are doing. The person on the street who's smoking is looking for happiness. The person who's drinking is looking for freedom from misery. The person who's working is looking for happiness in the future. The person who's studying, although may not be enjoying it now, is looking for happiness in the future. The person who's in a movie theater, eating ice cream, working out, exercise, they're all looking for happiness, either at the moment or in the future. But that happiness goes away. And in spiritual life, as servant of Krishna, we are experiencing happiness now and in the future. Only difference is, it only keeps on supposedly increasing. Anandam buddhi vardhanam. So to enjoy is not a problem. How we enjoy, that's the issue. So when we are serving the ultimate happy, Krishna is the ultimate happy. So when we are contacting the ultimate happy, we are supposed to become happy, no? Because Krishna is happy, when you come in touch with happiness, we become happy. If Krishna is fire, when you come in touch with fire, you become warm. When you come in the presence of light, you become enlightened. So Krishna is happy. When we are serving Krishna, we become happy. There's nothing wrong in being happy as a devotee. We should be happy. In fact, we should come in front of Krishna and say, I'm very happy. I'm enjoying serving you.
Really?
Yeah, of course. Otherwise you come to Krishna and say, my dear Krishna, you are enjoying. I am miserable. Krishna like, what? What's wrong? You should always be happy.
It's amazing.
Yeah. See, you're happy. We should be happy. We should come to Krishna. My dear Kishore Kishori, I am so happy. I'm enjoying being your servant. Thank you. I love it. Keep me as a servant. So pick up Bhagavad Gita, chapter 9, texts 1, 2, and 3. And in that one, Krishna says, Susukham kartum avyayam. The devotional service is one that makes a person happy. And that person enjoys life. Krishna is called Govinda, one who's happy. Right? Govinda means one who gives our senses happiness and enjoyment. He gives pleasure to the cows, Govinda. But go also means senses. Therefore, when we do something for Krishna, we feel thrilled and happy. That is Krishna's gift to us. What do we give Krishna? Service. We give Krishna happiness. What does he give to us? More service and happiness. It's an exchange program. We give Krishna happiness, he gives us happiness.
I've had some experience that I shared, that somebody asked me, why are you so happy, why your eyes are so sparkling? And I said, well, I'm here, I'm serving, I would never know why it can happen to me like this. And then another day, I became miserable for some reason.
That is correct.
But I noticed, just because we sometimes share our happiness with others, and I don't find it, it's really good thing to do. So how to offer our happiness to Krishna, but not really show to others?
No, why not? We should show to others, everyone, that I'm very happy in serving Krishna. If people ask us, why are you happy? I can't tell you, it's a secret. Actually, I'm not happy. I'm miserable. So when we come to Kishore Kishori, we're smiling. As soon as we turn around, this is horrible. I'm not. No, we should be very, very happy. They should be very, and others should ask us, why are you happy? Oh, because I'm a servant of Krishna. I'm a servant of Prabhupada. I'm very happy. Actually, being a servant of Prabhupada is more happy, but I'm happy to be Prabhupada's servant. Then others will say, I want that. I also want that.
And
And we are miserable another day because we are thinking we are this body or this mind or whatever that is. That is why there is suffering. But when we think I'm devotee, we're always happy. Sometimes we find unhappy devotees. It's an oxymoron word. Unhappy devotees. But we should be happy. And please show it and share it. Let your eyes sparkle, as you said. Don't hide it. One should. And happiness is our birthright. This is why.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Anyone else? Giridhar, you had something? You're happy? Okay. All right, if nothing else, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Mm-hmm.